is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
1 year since the withdrawal from Afghanistan by the U.S. and NATO concerns. 1 year, lessons learned. 75 years since the partition of the Indian subcontinent into Pakistan and India, and 75 years of turmoil that continue with violence, just as in Afghanistan, the violence continues. I welcome Bill Rajo of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's a senior fellow. He and his colleagues have kept the Long War Journal watching Afghanistan these many decades. And we begin with lessons learned with one right in front of us, the deep irony. Omar Khalid Khorasani. Bill, a very good day to you. Who was Khorasani? What do we know about his death? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Khorasani, he's the perfect example of the problems that exist in the region, particularly the interlinked interlinked relationships between the Taliban, the Afghan Taliban, the Pakistani Taliban, Al-Qaeda, a host of other jihadist groups that operate in the region. Khorasani was the head of a faction of the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan. He was killed in what's reported to be a roadside bombing in eastern Afghanistan. He's a very dangerous individual. You read his resume, which I wrote up at the Long War Journal, and he's sheltered Ayman al-Zawahiri. He called for the seizing of Pakistan's nukes. He supports a global jihad and the establishment of the caliphate, overthrowing Pakistani regime, taking the fight to India. You name it, he's said it. But he hasn't just said things. He's done things, responsible for numerous deadly terrorist attacks, including one of the most heinous ones was a massive bombing in a park in, I believe it was in Lahore in Pakistan on Easter Day. And his spokesman came out and celebrated this attack and said, "We're glad we killed Christians. We are against them." And it's just awful. Certainly it's a good thing that he's gone, but he and many others like him are operating in the Afghanistan-Pakistan region, and they have safe haven inside of Afghanistan now with the support of the Taliban regime. There is no doubt in my mind that the top Afghan Taliban leaders were aware he was there. This is the failure. You know, he's just the latest example, Zawahiri as well, of the failure of the Biden administration's policy to withdraw from Afghanistan and do so in a way that allowed the Taliban to take full control of the country and offer it up as safe haven for terrorist groups.
I call Khorasani a warlord because Bill, in his write-up and over the years, links Khorasani to deadliness throughout the region and transnationally. We begin with the fact that the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, that's the Pakistani Taliban, is a threat to the Islamabad government. At the same time, the Islamabad government, through its agencies, chiefly the ISI, is said to be responsible, beholden to, in league with the Afghanistan Taliban. So there's that complication. How is it? Why is it? What is the self-interest of supporting Afghanistan Taliban, knowing that it is linked to the Pakistani Taliban that means to destroy or undermine your administration? However, there's one other link that we need to make before we speak of the lessons learned. I learned from Bill's write-up, Khorasani was in league with, allied with, working with Qareez Zia Rahman, and Bill describes him as the dual-hatted Taliban and Al-Qaeda leader who operates in Pakistan's tribal agency, tribal agencies of Momand and Bajur, where a number of drone strikes over the decades have identified Al-Qaeda working back and forth with the Taliban. So, Bill, we're talking about linkages to Al-Qaeda that remain in place through the Pakistani Taliban. Do I generalize that correctly?
Absolutely, John. And just these relationships were forged by decades, forged in fire over the course of decades. They don't just go away because the U.S. leaves the region. That's not how this works. And what you earlier described was the wheel of jihad. Pakistan supports the Afghan Taliban because it wants strategic depth in Afghanistan. The Afghan Taliban supports the Pakistani Taliban because they're allies because they share the same goals to establish Islamic Emirates in South and Central Asia. And then but the Pakistani Taliban attacks the Pakistani state. And the Pakistani state continues to support the Afghan Taliban because it will accept those the pinpricks of the Pakistani state, or I'm sorry, of the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, even though it's killed tens of thousands of civilians and soldiers and policemen and government officials. But it accepts that. It's the price it pays to get strategic depth in Afghanistan. And this is why the Afghan Taliban flourishes. And this is why the Pakistani Taliban flourishes. And this is why Al-Qaeda flourishes. And the Lashkar-e-Taiba and Jaish Mohammed and the alphabet soup of terrorist groups that operate in the region that are not just a threat to Afghanistan or to Pakistan, but to India, to China, to the stands. And ultimately, that creates conditions for safe haven that allows Al-Qaeda to plot and execute not just attacks against the U.S., but its overall goal of establishing a global caliphate. And people discount that, but Al-Qaeda now has an emirate in Afghanistan and one state within the caliphate. And the Taliban calls itself the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan.
A detail about Khorasani and his relationship with Rahman, whom I understand the U.S. has been pursuing for decades. I don't know if they've caught him yet, Bill. It's unclear. These are fog of war here. But Khorasani, what's important is how he died. You say it was a roadside bombing. By whom, Bill? Do we have any clue?
And first on Qarizi Rahman, he is another nasty individual with a resume just like Khorasani and a host of other jihadist leaders in the area. Trained female, indoctrinated, recruited and trained female suicide bombers to conduct attacks in Afghanistan that have killed Americans and Afghans as well as in Pakistan. Khorasani celebrated his use of female suicide bombers. That's the evil fruits of that relationship. As far as how he was killed, we don't know. It could have been the Islamic State, which, of course, opposes the Afghan and Pakistani Taliban. It could have been resistance from Afghan resistance that is starting to spring up. I think that's unlikely given where it occurred, but it certainly isn't beyond the realm of possibility. And it could have been perhaps they were transporting a bomb that blew up, what we call premature detonation, or perhaps it was just unexploded ordnance or a roadside bomb left over from the Taliban's attacks on the Afghan military, U.S. military, and other NATO countries that were operating in the region. We'll never know because there's no free press inside of Afghanistan. So this just gets filed as an unknown. The Taliban they're not even going to admit that Khorasani was in Afghanistan, let alone tell us how he died.
So the death of Zawahiri, which we have examined these last weeks, in no fashion eliminates Al-Qaeda's heavy influence and operating zone in Afghanistan. Is that how to observe this?
Yeah, absolutely, John. The fact that we got him, that's a good thing. But Zawahiri certainly was not in Afghanistan alone. He has a staff. He has a security team. He has a media operation. These are integral to Al-Qaeda's operations. They may not have been in the same home as him or even next door to him, but they certainly were within reach for him to use. And lest we discount, look, the common thought is there's a core Al-Qaeda based in Afghanistan, and there's only a dozen or so legacy leaders. And if we kill them, we decapitate Al-Qaeda. But this is a complete misunderstanding, either unintentionally, in the case of some intentionally, in order to disengage from this fight. And that's very dangerous. That's put out there to just to say Al-Qaeda is impotent. But when we examined Osama bin Laden's documents that were seized during the raid on his compound in 2011, we know that the Al-Qaeda's leader has a staff. And many of these the members of the general staff for the leader is they become top leaders of Al-Qaeda. We've seen this historically. The deputy leader has a staff of his own. And then top leaders of Al-Qaeda, of its, quote, core that should only be based in Afghanistan, Pakistan, but aren't. They're members of groups from the branches, which are an integral part of the Al-Qaeda's operations. The head of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb or North Africa and Shabab, which is East Africa, they're in the chain of succession. And they're most certainly on Al-Qaeda's Shura Majlis or its executive council.
Bill, one more thought here about a year after Afghanistan. Early on, there was reporting that the U.S. had very few sources now. I think the word was blinded or have dramatically reduced from studying the region. Is that still true? Does Zawahiri's death indicate that we've developed sources that didn't exist a year ago?
The statement that was made by General McKenzie a year ago, almost a year ago, was that the U.S. visibility has been reduced to about 1 to 2% of what it used to be when the U.S. had a presence in the country. You know, I think Zawahiri is certainly an outlier in this. He's a far more visible figure. If you can identify nodes that apparently they identified family members as possible, they identified a courier. You know, that's fine. They were able to do that and or should be commended for that. There's certainly a degree of visibility in finding him. But what about the rest of Al-Qaeda's network? If we had good assets and we viewed Al-Qaeda as a threat, which I don't think this administration does, then we would be targeting them as well. It's not just a matter of being able to identify them and locate them. It's also a matter of being able to execute that strike and then execute it in a manner that's demanded in these days. And that's with no civilian casualties. And that's extremely difficult to do inside of a city. So, which is very likely where Al-Qaeda's top leadership and its general staff is located. So I still think our ability to see inside of Afghanistan, and this isn't just my thoughts, but talking to individuals who are involved with trying to identify Al-Qaeda's strength in Afghanistan, they are telling me it's an extremely difficult process. It's nowhere near as easy to do as when we had a presence in the country.
I'm speaking to Bill Rajo, a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and his colleagues for decades have kept the Long War Journal, a chronicle of the combat across the vast Ummah from the Atlantic Ocean to the Hindu Kush. We're focusing on 1 year after Afghanistan. And when we come back, lessons learned in general for how the exit was handled. We await reports and we look forward to learning more about the hectic planning of August of 2021. I'm John Batchelor.